Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Famous Monsters of Filmland Magazine.
Welcome to the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Horace J. Ackerman's classic magazine that started it all back in 1958, often imitated, never duplicated. We're more than just monsters. We're covering sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and all kinds of genre pop culture, living up to 40's classic roots while staying current and ahead of the curve, at least when we can. I'm David Weiner, editor of Famous Monsters, and with me today on our podcast is Caroline Stevenson, the Famous Monsters media and promotions manager.
Hello.
And George Marrero, FM's jack of all trades and resident creative artist.
Hello, hello.
Producing the podcast is FM's Cameron Hathaway. How are you doing?
I'm the only one not wearing my Famous Monsters t-shirt right now.
I think you look great.
I wore mine yesterday. All right.
It's a Batman kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Hench. Do you want to explain Hench in 3 seconds?
It's Venture Brothers reference. The henchman, he becomes Batman at one point during the season. But I'll talk about Venture Brothers a little bit more.
That sounds good. Well, it's December, and our first podcast out of the gate, we're trying to make things extra special today. And we're going to be talking about a little movie called Star Wars. And I'll listen to a little whoops on your own. And with this Star Wars, we're also talking with Mark Hamill himself.
Ow.
Yeah. Well, Mark is not here to be in the podcast with us, but I had a wonderful conversation with him on the phone, and we're going to play some clips from that in a little bit. Also, today's podcast, we are going to be talking with Michael Dougherty, the writer and the director of Krampus, who's also known for his writing skills on X-Men 2 and X-Men Apocalypse and Superman Returns. And, of course, most know him, arguably, for Trick or Treat.
Such a good film.
I know, Caroline, that's one of your favorites.
Very underrated.
And he also talked about that we're going to have a Trick or Treat 2 now that he's got Krampus out of the way.
But
you could read a lot about this in the new issue of Famous Monsters. How do you get the new issue of Famous Monsters?
Well, you get the new issue either on CaptainCo.com or through FamousMonsters.com, and it will be available on newsstands and at Barnes & Noble starting December 8th.
Yeah, so pre-order.
Mark it down.
Yeah, mark it down, pre-order.
Very, very nice.
We're extra special proud of this issue because it's a really fun one. It's a sci-fi themed issue. And it's got all sorts of stuff in it. In addition to a Star Wars spectacular, we've got Martin Landau talking about Space 1999. We've got Sam J. Jones, Flash Gordon himself, looking back at the making of Flash Gordon on his 35th anniversary. And lots more stuff that we'll get into in a little bit. But right now, I guess unless you've been living under a rock, there's a little movie called Star Wars The Force Awakens opening this month. It's finally coming out on December 18th.
Force. It's calling to you. Just let it in.
Yeah. I think people are a little excited about that in this room and everywhere around the world.
Just a bit.
So we're going to talk a little bit about our favorite Star Wars things and share our favorite Star Wars tidbits from our first experience watching Star Wars, whatever Star Wars that may be for some people, and our expectations of the new movie. You know, in the magazine, we also have a wonderful article by a guy named David Nielsen, a hilarious writer, who wrote all about the Star Wars Holiday Special, the infamous special, and perhaps we should talk about that as well. First of all, guys, I'm opening it to the floor. What's your Star Wars story?
man. Growing up, my parents didn't actually introduce me to Star Wars like most children had the pleasure of doing. Like, I had to discover it on my own, flipping through the channels one day, and I remember being like on like a regular like local TV channel, and I was like blown away, like, whoa, what is this? What's going on here? You know, and seeing like just light swords. As a kid, you don't know it's lightsabers. It's just swords of light. You know, and you're just on a space adventure like no other, because all I knew was Star Trek. I was like, this is not Star Trek. Like, you know, and I remember showing this to my parents, like, how come you've never shown this to me before? Like, I've lived 10 years of my life, and this has never happened. You know, my father, anyone who, like, he had walls of VHSs and DVDs, and it's like, you are pretty much Blockbuster. How come this is not in our collection?
I'm just going to say that you were not raised right. I'm going to venture to say that.
I was raised mediocre.
But obviously you were raised right eventually, because Star Wars came along somehow by accident. And so did you see it from the beginning and you just were – was this a planned event or
– I lucked out on seeing A New Hope on TV. And then once I saw that, I got my parents to rent the other two.
So like you saw it in TV Guide back in the day when TV Guide existed and you said – what's the Star Wars thing? It doesn't say Star Trek. It says Star Wars.
Not even TV Guide. It's just flipping, like just channel surfing. Old school channel surfing.
Do you remember what point of the
what
movie
is that?
You came?
Channel
what
surfing.
Is a channel flipping? What is that?
Well, back in my day.
So what do you remember coming right in the middle of the movie or right at the beginning? What was your timing?
It was pretty much Luke is with Han at this point in time.
Okay.
So I missed like the first part of it. I didn't know why he's with him. But he's on his ship, and they're pretty much going on their journey at this point in time.
Okay. But that was enough to just, like, make you stop in your tracks.
Yeah. Because I already knew who Harrison Ford was, you know, as a kid. And I was like, whoa, he's, like, really young here. Like, what movie is this? So I was like that little, hook of, like, okay, I'm going to keep watching because I know him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he's – to even backtrack a little bit further – the first thing I saw was Spaceballs. So when I finished watching, I was super happy with Star Wars, obviously. But there was that also feeling of like, well, that was a bad parody of Spaceballs, which was a funny movie. I thought parodies are supposed to be funny. But besides that, this is an amazing film.
Well, that's
this
like
action packed.
That's like seeing Young Frankenstein first, and then watching
exactly
any Frankenstein film, Son of Frankenstein.
Yeah, it was precisely like that.
Lucas owes Mel Brooks money.
Yeah,
Caroline, what was your experience?
Well, so mine was a little bit different. Grew up with a house full of ladies, so didn't originally get to see the first three Star Wars. But when I was, you know, eight or nine years old, I saw a magical trailer on the television that was Star Wars Episode One.
Wow, The Phantom Menace.
And I was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
I remember for days leading up to when it was coming out, like, I just ran around the house pretending. I had no idea what the story was totally about, but I was just like, there were lights and there were aliens and I'm going to run around and I'm just going to like make up my own stories because I don't know what the story is yet. And then I saw it and it was the greatest thing I had ever seen. And I know I'm going to get so much hate for saying that, but understand, I was a child and
there was
Jar Jar Binks on the TV doing funny things, and there were awesome lightsaber battles. And for an 8 or 9 year old, it was amazing.
Well, it was perfect. It was perfectly targeted for an 8 or 9 year old. When now we're gonna just go straight to our age difference, but I think it illustrates a lot because you know I'm so old that I saw Star Wars in the theater when it came out the first time around, but I was the same age. I was. I was 9 years old when Star Wars came out, and my experience was the same thing. I saw commercials for it on TV, and I'm like, I must see that, whatever it is. I don't get it because I can't comprehend it, but it's something I must see. And for me, I walked into that movie theater expecting some Star Trek-y space something movie, and I was transformed. I was transfixed, and I was a changed person. I was a radically different person walking in versus walking out, and I felt exhilarated watching that movie. And I mean, for Star Wars itself, when you first are just seeing that scroll of words going up, and then the star field, and then next thing you know, this massive ship flying over your head, you know, you're just mesmerized from that moment on. And I was just, it was such a ride. And so that movie was arguably for kids too. You know, my dad said, oh, that was a great movie, but you should watch Flash Gordon sometime.
I mean, he's right.
Yeah, well, he's so much more right than I ever wanted that to be true about, because, you know, everything from the scroll and all the stuff that was borrowed from Star Wars, if not outright stolen. But I don't think you need to defend your love for prequels, because it spoke to you. And Jar Jar and everything that was with it, whether or not, you know, boy, it's tougher for you. I don't even envy you, because at least I could stand by the original trilogy and say, yeah, yeah, that's perfect. But, you know, you have to defend your honor on a daily basis.
You know, I got to say, for like all the people who are haters on both, like on the new trilogy, the one thing you can't deny that they both have and they both encapsulate is that visual stimulation of enjoyment. You know, you can't deny that. The visuals on all of episode 1, 2, and 3 are just amazing. You know, for me alone, like, granted, ignore the holes in the story if you're a lover of 4, 5, and 6, but just seeing it, those battles, they're just intense and amazing. Like, me and my friends would try to reenact those bites in freaking our parking lots and stuff. You know, like, I remember going to Walmart and buying lightsabers so we can fight each other.
Well, that movie,
this is 20-year-old men.
This was yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, that movie, a whole generation saw that movie, and they all went to become filmmakers, and they all grabbed you know, Super 8 cameras or video cameras or everything in between and make it themselves. And, boy, it's a lot easier these days, because I envy the kids, literally the kids who get to see Force Awakens, because they could just make a Star Wars movie on their iPhone now a lot more easily than I was able to try. I remember trying to coerce my mom and dad to let me use their Super 8 camera and buy me film. And I remember my mom said, you know, they were behind it, and they were very supportive. But I remember my mom said, well, do you have a script? And I remember thinking to myself, what? A script? You mean I have to plan this out? I can't just grab the camera and my friends and run around and go, pew, pew, pew. So that was a little tough for me. So whatever you feel about the prequels, whether they're canon or ignored, I think you have to admit it speaks to everybody in a certain way, shape, or form. And I think the cool thing about Force Awakens, however you feel about the prequels are just the prequels. And this is a direct sequel to Return of the Jedi 30-plus years later. And that's pretty cool.
So excited.
What are your expectations and feelings about this? What do you want to see most? What are you worried about the most? Have you seen everything? Are you trying not to get all the spoilers at a certain
I've
point?
I've definitely watched like every trailer like 1,000 times. Like, I was sick a week
it's
ago,
hard not
and
to.
That's all I did while I was in bed was pretty much just watch. In between like my binge watching of TV shows, that's like Hulu's on. I don't want to see that commercial. I'm gonna put on some Star Wars trailers. Watch that while that's happening. Then when my show comes back, I'll probably still be watching Star Wars trailers because I forgot that was on.
Well, part of it was for me, you know, I hate to admit, but, you know, after so much hate on the prequels, there was a time where I sort of moved away from Star Wars and kind of felt, you know,
blasphemy.
Alienated. I felt a little alienated.
Well,
but like,
guilt by association. You didn't want to be Team Jar Jar, at least, you know, flying the flag, right?
It was more just like, just moved away from the whole thing in general, and it hurt. And then all these new trailers started coming out, and I was like, oh, what is this feeling
what
again?
Is this tingly feeling that's not sexual
happening? What is happening? Like, you know, every trailer, every leaked, like, when I got my hands on that leaked Mark Hamill, leaked or not leaked, purposely leaked Mark Hamill in
image.
His Jedi robes,
right.
Like, that was the beginning for me. I just got this, like, my heart like skipped a beat, and then every trailer since then I've just been like, ooh, like what's gonna happen next? And I got my Star Wars costume after Halloween just, you know, excited for the whole thing.
I promised myself, because I really want to maintain some surprise left, that I would stop watching trailers after a certain point, and I have after the first two trailers. But first trailer I had to watch, there was just no doubt that I was going to watch that. But I said after that I was just going to – a moratorium. It was all embargoed for me. But then that second trailer came along, and I'm like, oh, okay, I know everything from Force Friday and all the toys anyway. I might as well just watch this trailer anyway. And
like a drug addict, just one last hit. Just one last hit.
One last hit. One last hit. No, well, that was my last hit. I did stop after that. But I have to tell you, the more I think about it, and like there's a recent Omaze, which does wonderful things for charity that brings people, you know, that gave people an opportunity to, I guess, one winner to be in the Star Wars movie if everyone donated $10 each. And now they're doing it. They recently did a campaign where they're trying to drum up support for more money, but to get people into a screening either in London or LA. And you get to hang out with the crowd, hang out with the cast. And during this little viral video, there people are just talking on Skype, and then Harrison Ford just kind of walks by in the background and pops his head in. And the people's reactions were the surprised to the very emotional. And all I thought to myself is I got a little tear in my eye, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, I think I'm going to cry when I see Star Wars. This is going to tug at my nostalgia way too hard for me.
Well, going back to the trailers, it's kind of hard because I'm kind of your mindset too. Like, I want to have some surprises left. I want to just be, you know, completely just thrilled in the theater. But it's so hard because, like, I see, like, almost every other day there's new announcements of, like, oh, new television spots, new footage, new this, new international trailer. Like, the international trailer was the last one after the first two trailers that were released that I said, okay, that's the only one I'll watch on my own accord here. If anything else surprises me, then I just have to go with it. I'm not going to be like, oh, la, 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 can't hear.
That's what I'm doing.
It's going to be interesting because, yeah, I mean, you want that surprise. You want to have that inner child come out and just be like, oh, my God. You want that I'm your father moment for this new generation. So hopefully
what are you talking about, I am your father moment? I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know that Vader means father in German. So,
oh,
yeah, I am your
what?
Vader. That's
wait a minute.
Yeah. Mind blown.
Mind blown.
Germans are like, yeah, we knew that from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, now it's kind of interesting because the big now J.J. Abrams is very big on misdirection and keeping things very cryptic on purpose. And so you look at all the marketing and you're like, wait a minute, where's Mark Hamill? To the point where Mark Hamill's saying, I'm not even allowed to say whether or not I'm in this movie or not.
It's very, very hush-hush right now.
Well, Mark Hamill did a wonderful job in this movie because I spoke to him and he told me that he did it. And he also told me, with the sanction of Disney allowing him to tell me, Disney listened into our conversation and made sure that he didn't say anything he wasn't supposed to tell me. That being said, we had a wonderful conversation because it wasn't an obligation for Mark. Mark is a true monster kid, and he loves Famous Monsters, and he grew up reading Famous Monsters, and he credits, believe it or not, Famous Monsters for potentially his career choice. It was his film school when he was 10 years old, and he was into King Kong, and he'd open up the pages of Famous Monsters and see the behind-the-scenes photos of Willis O'Brien doing Kong and Jack Pierce doing makeup for Frankenstein, and it really educated him, and it really sort of nudged him along the path towards realizing that not only could you watch movies and enjoy them, but you could actually work on them and have fun and get paid as a career. And so, thank you to Mark Hamill. He said when an opportunity arose for him to talk to Famous Monsters, he wanted to thank us. He wanted to thank Forrest Ackerman for creating the magazine that inspired him. And he wanted to thank us for keeping the spirit alive and the joie de vivre that Forrest Ackerman had, and for everything that leads to Star Wars and sci-fi and fantasy and horror and the magic of movie making. And so we talked about this, and here's an excerpt from our conversation.
Well, Famous Monsters really played an important part in my life and in my decision and my belief that working in the areas that I wanted to pursue was a possibility at all. My very first issue I bought was issue number 19 in the summer of 1962 with the Tales of Terror cover with Peter Lorre, Basil Rathbone, and Vincent Price. And it was the first time I made the leap from buying a comic book to something that was nearly five times as expensive. And I begged my mom to buy it for me. And what it did was, you know, further that belief. Like I would, another pivotal moment for me was seeing Clarence Nash on the Walt Disney program doing Donald Duck. It never really occurred to me that grown-ups went into work and made voices for cartoons. I might have been five or six. And again, it made me realize, wow, people go to work and do this for a living. I should also say that one of the most important movies I ever saw as a kid was the original 1933 King Kong. Now, every boy that I knew loved dinosaurs. I didn't know how it was done. It was emotionally a traumatic experience, you know, to see this wonderful creature killed, and it just traumatized me. I mean, it was emotionally devastating, and I was just obsessed with this film. So you flash forward to, you know, all of those movies coming out on television, all those Universal classics that were released in the late 50s being accessible to a whole new generation. And, you know, I think there's a book out now about the whole monster craze of the early 60s. I'll never forget walking into my local 5- and 10-cent store, and I remember it as clear as it were yesterday, where I first saw the Frankenstein model kit. This is in a world where there were only military hardware and airplanes and things that didn't really interest me. And all of a sudden, there was that magical toy that changed my life. I immediately left the store. I only had about 11 cents. I was going to buy a candy bar or a comic book. I went out and I shined shoes and went door to door collecting bottles for the deposits to go back and get that model kit. So Famous Monsters was something that fueled your imagination and told you how these things were done. I'll never forget issue, I think it was 25, the King Kong cover. It was special photo film book, you know, and this was the first time I ever saw photographs of Willis O'Brien and Marcel Delgado and the miniature sets that they built and the explanation of stop frame photography. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a major revelation for me, and so I'm very grateful to Famous Monsters. You're sort of your entryway into that world of professional show business, you know, before Castle of Frankenstein or before Cine Fantastique or this was the one that stood out because there was no other magazine like it. None whatsoever. I mean, I went on to read Eerie and Creepy and Vampirella. I never read Scream Thrills Illustrated or the Western title, but you know, it really was a very, very important part of my childhood. And so, I mean, the idea that it's still around. By the way, one of the first things I did when the first Star Wars came out and the the whole side of opened up for me in the terms of my being a quote-unquote celebrity was being able to request and a meeting with Forrest J. Ackerman and have him invite me to his apartment. It was probably in 78 or 79. I don't have the exact date, but he invited me over and I saw his legendary collection and was able to thank him face to face. So that was a very big deal for me. And when they said there was an opportunity to talk to you guys today, I just thought, wouldn't that be great to be able to thank them for what they meant, in like I say, in my life and my decision to go into this. I mean, it really sort of it seemed to me after reading it that a tangible profession. I mean, I didn't know who Ray Harryhausen was or any of these people. That was my education. That was my film school when I was still, I guess the first issue I bought, I was 10 years old.
Well, it's amazing how these things kind of come full circle and can be very cyclical. And, of course, 30 years after the last Star Wars movie you made, and I'm sure after you talked to George after the prequels and he said never again, you must be I'm a bit stunned to have a whole new film under your belt at this point and working on
it. That's putting it mildly. I mean, I still can't believe it's happening. It's just surreal. I mean, I thought certainly if they go forward, that wouldn't be a surprise to me. But it would be focused on a new generation. It wouldn't involve us. And to a large extent, that's true. It is about setting up the next generation of heroes and villains. But the fact that half a dozen cast members from the originals can be there to place it in some sort of context to be there for the historical side of things. I mean, I think it's wonderful that people can, especially young people, can see the progression of the characters, and they should see Luke Skywalker as a senior citizen. They saw him when he was a teenager, and especially since these films are so timeless, much in the way that animated films are timeless, these kids that are 5, 6, 7 years old, they have no idea that they were made so long ago, and they're, I think, a little bewildered to try and figure out who's this actor here that looks like he's Luke's grandfather. Well, I'm old enough to be Luke's grandfather now, and that's a healthy, natural thing for people to see.
And so, ironically, you're making this movie at the same exact age as Sir Alec Guinness was.
That's right.
Star Wars. That had to be somewhat emotionally moving for you.
Well, absolutely, because there's nobody that I've worked with in the entire saga that had as profound an impact on me as Alec Guinness has. And even though, I mean, intellectually, I know I'm the same age as Alec Guinness. I emotionally, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I still like the Three Stooges and the Rolling Stones. How can I be old?
Well, you're working with a new generation, as you said, and introducing a whole new generation of Star Wars fans to a whole new cast to continue the story on. How was your experience working with these younger people, and did you impart any wisdom after having such an avalanche experience yourself over your lifetime?
Well, first of all, I should say that when I read the script and saw what they had in store for the fans, it was thrilling. I mean, the new storyline, the new characters, and especially the actors that they chose to play them are thrilling beyond words. At that table read, I had an idea of how they would look and sound, but then to see them in person do it, I thought, oh my gosh, the saga is in great hands because these young people are so talented. I mean, you say, did I depart any sort of advice? Well, the answer is they could probably give me some advice. They're so accomplished and so beyond what I expected. But in terms of how they're going to process the what's in store for them, that's impossible. I mean, people say, well, what's it like to be in Star Wars? Well, we have sort of a unique perspective of what's it like to not be in Star Wars. I mean, because it's been beyond what any of us expected, and I would imagine that there's no way that you can sort of. I mean, they know they're in for something come December 18th, but there's no way you can really prepare someone for what's going to happen. I mean, it's sort of like being in the eye of a hurricane. You know, you're just amazed at the reaction. I mean, I know I would say there's a middle ground where people enjoy the films for what they are and then move on. But there's something I call the UPF, the ultra passionate fans who live and breathe it and know so much more about it than even I do, because I don't read all the supporting novels and comic books and play the games and all that. And I long ago realized that that this doesn't belong to me in the way I imagined it before. It really belongs to the world.
So there you have Mark Hamill talking to me, which was a wonderful experience. He was very candid, and he's a very passionate guy about really matter-of-fact geek life and geek things. And for a guy who once told me that he grew up on Ray Harryhausen and reading Famous Monsters, to be standing there on that first Star Wars movie in the cantina and looking at all the monsters and aliens and creatures around him, it was just a fantastic and surreal experience for him. Boy, whatever happened after that, he never expected it. He thought it was going to be some midnight movie that would be a footnote. And then you're in the eye of the hurricane for the rest of your entire life. And I don't know, do you think he can give the proper preparation for the new Force Awakens cast? Is that possible at all for them to be ready, or is their life changed forever?
I don't think it's ever preparable, honestly, for a situation like that. Like, it's, especially for them, like, it's fermented so much at this point in time. You know, like, when he jumped into it, he was at the birth of this idea, you know. And so it was really just the beginning of this nerddom that we have now for the Star Wars. But for these new guys, it's like they're going to get all of the old fans, the middle ground, and then the new fans, the new kids. It's just a bombardment, you know,
of
craziness. Yeah, you know.
And I have to commend Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams and the producers of this. And in going head on with multicultural casting, which shouldn't be an issue in this day and age, but apparently it still is. So I commend
them. Yeah.
I commend them for just saying, listen, we're telling a good story, and color and sex is irrelevant. It's only relevant to how it plays into our story. So I think that's
right.
Wonderful.
I think that, too, just opens up the fandom more. Like, of course, you want to see yourself sort of represented up on screen. And
precisely.
I think they did a great job of, you know, opening up that to everyone.
Yeah, definitely. We talked about it before, I think, like, where I was like, this is the first time in a movie, especially like something like this, where I'm feeling like, wow, if I auditioned for this, maybe I could have got cast for this. You know, I could have been anyone in this film, which you don't get that too often. You know, it's really nice.
Yay.
Nice to them.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad that, well, Caroline, you're going to be mad at me, but I'm glad when Finn takes his helmet off and it's the Stormtrooper is Finn and not a clone. That just makes me very, very happy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I mean, if anything, it shows that, you know, the Galactic Empire, you know, they're all about diversity. And,
yeah.
You know, they don't care if you're just one person, just happen to be cloned in several different times over. Like, they're diversity hires. And, you know, good for them. Really.
The Dark Tide takes everybody.
Exactly.
Well, I think, you know, maybe perhaps the Stormtroopers are such bad shots. So many were wiped out. They had to just they need to diversify.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have enough people to fit in the armor, I suppose.
They put a couple of them in a dark room, but unfortunately, unlike rabbits, nothing happened. So they had to just go and hire them. So it's crazy.
Well, you can get a lot more from the Mark Hamill interview in the new issue of Famous Monsters. And among the things that we cover are an amazing – I won't tell you exactly what it is here. You're going to have to check out the magazine. But Mark Hamill, the day after I talked to him, he called me back and said, I want to talk to you some more because I totally forgot to tell you about this one very fun, cool thing. And he went on to tell me all about this wonderful birthday gift that J.J. Abrams gave him that was this one-of-a-kind item that ties directly into some of his loves of movie history from his childhood. And it was extremely relevant for Famous Monsters. And I'll leave it at that, so you could check it out. And another wonderful thing that he talks about, among other details about his life growing up as a monster kid and also about working on the Force Awakens set and also what it was like to be shooting at the same age as Alec Guinness was when he did the first Star Wars. He also talks about the anthology spinoffs and what he would love to see, which character he would love to see. Which character would you guys like to see in these spinoffs? Come on, Caroline. You want a Jar Jar? You want a Jar Jar spinoff?
Look, maybe I do. Maybe I do.
Wait, is this bullying? Are we bullying right now? No. Or is this
Jar-Jar's
just conversation?
Wild ride. Yeah, exactly. Just like
they could make Disney rides out of it, toys, T-shirts, the whole shebang.
Mm.
No, I think you know. Right now, I'm just super curious about Captain Phasma.
Mm.
Phasma. Yeah, no, Phasma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phasma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it right. Yeah.
Named after the Phantasm Ball.
Yeah. Super, super intrigued by Gwendolyn Christie's character. I'm very excited to learn more.
I think it'll be kind of cool if they don't recognize whether or not it's a male or a female. It's just Captain Phasma, and Captain Phasma is going to be malevolent and kick ass.
Awesome.
Don't have to have a male or female voice or take the helmet off. I like
just an ominous presence.
Yeah. I like the mystery. And when it comes to these spinoff movies, everyone says they want a Boba Fett movie, and I'm not gonna say no.
Yeah.
But I also like the mystery. I like the whole man with no name concept where you never see who's under that helmet. You just know that they're a force to be reckoned with, and that's all I personally care about.
I also feel like with the prequels, we kind of get where he's coming from already. You know, knowing that his dad was, spoiler alert, he is the clones.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Damn it.
You know, and having that, like, it's obvious the path he went down was through anger and revenge. But for me, I would, granted, without seeing Force Awakens yet, I would love to know the backstory of Kylo Ren.
Because
right now, that's my boy. I want to see how he made his sword, because it looks amazing. For me, that was the golden moment. It's like, I gotta have that in my life.
It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't wait to see Boba Fett in the new movie, because we all know that he survived the Sarlacc pit, right? I mean, no creature in the desert can just keep him at bay to digest for thousands of years. No. He's gonna come back.
There's a wonderful fan trailer that was made. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they did exactly that. It basically is a teaser where Boba Fett climbs out of the Sarlacc pit and just walks into the sunset of the double sunset
off his
of
shoulder. He's like, "All right, that was enough."
Pretty much, and that was badass enough.
I think they also made like a map of the inside of the Sarlacc pit, and there's even like a little space where they're like, this is possibly where Boba Fett escaped out of.
Boba's
but it was
room,
just this huge expanse of
he hid in the colon, I think it was.
Pretty cool.
Well, lastly on that issue, I think it's kind of cool, actually, just for the anthologies, where I love how in Rogue One it's not necessarily just about a character, it's a concept, and it's all about stealing the Death Star plans, and it's a heist movie, and that to me is very cool, and I love how you can tie that into earlier Star Wars characters and keep it very much in canon and very much sort of paralleling what goes on right before Episode 4, A New Hope, and they're going to be doing Grand Moff Tarkin is going to be in it as a CGI character, and I hope that's great and not distracting.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, but if you look at how CGI has grown and prospered in a good way, you can say, well, it's like Tron Legacy and it's a bit cool, but it's distracting. Or you could say it's like, let's see, there's two things. Ant-Man was pretty impressive. If you saw Ant-Man and you saw a young Michael Douglas, it was picture perfect. There was no way that you could tell the difference. Then there's another example that totally completely.
Well, it's kind of like how they've been doing with the Terminator films, you know.
That's what I was talking about.
Actually, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's
thank you for
impeccable
prompting me.
How it looks exactly like him. It's ridiculous.
That entire movie, I think, would have been a smash if it was a 5-minute movie of old Arnold meets new Arnold.
Yeah,
and that's it.
And that's all you get. That would have been enough for a bunch of sequels. But so the holiday special, the Star Wars holiday special. Who here has seen the Star Wars holiday special?
I have.
Oh, we are all raising our hands.
I
know. With regret.
Happy Life Day, to everyone. By the way,
thank
Happy
you. Life thank Day, you very yes. much, Cameron. Yeah. I think it's something that George Lucas wishes that could just go away. What's the wonderful quote that George uses for the Star Wars holiday special?
I believe it has something to do with a sledgehammer.
Yes. This is a reported quote. If I had the time and a sledgehammer, I would track down every copy of that show and smash it.
Oof. Unfortunately, then the internet happened, and it will forever be online.
Which is wonderful.
Unsmashable.
Well, you know what's good about that is that you can turn it off whenever you want. And there are definite virtues of the Star Wars holiday special. I mean, even though it's pretty awful, in retrospect, I think to myself, how bad can it be? And then you go to it, and then you watch it. And then you see Lumpy and his family grunting at each other for the first 20
like
minutes.
Yeah,
no subtitles. Yeah, it's just like, and then you're like, all right. I guess that was a good
thing. They were very expressive in their facial features.
Yeah.
You know.
And then Bea Arthur and Harvey Korman. And that was kind of fun moments there. But
there's a starship moment. That was the best. And not starships in the space. No. Jefferson Starship.
Exactly. Well,
just randomly rocking out for
you
us.
Could see the pitch session. They're like, all right, we got to put a variety show together. What has to do with space? Jefferson Starship. They're perfect. Well, at least for me, I think the one thing that comes out of that, other than the fact that they actually got a contractually obligated original trilogy cast to do that because they were probably saying, well, I need to pay off that mortgage on the second home I just bought. But for me, the best thing about that whole Star Wars holiday special, other than the fact that it's just hilarious and infamous, is the cartoon.
Oh,
I think the
definitely.
Cartoon is very fun, and it introduces Boba Fett as well
for the first time. Yeah, it was the animation of it's actually not too bad for the time and everything. Like it's very close and reminiscent. Maybe not exact, but it's like the heavy metal movie. You know, I definitely has a feeling of that, which is nice.
And you almost kind of expect a little heavy metal sidebar to go on where, if anyone's seen that movie, there's lots of sex and drugs and rock and roll.
Whoop, whoop.
And you can kind of see them wanting to do it, but also realizing that it's a special. So I guess this drug that they took that puts them to sleep.
Yeah,
I don't know what that drug is. But
doesn't get explained.
But that was at a time where no one had seen Boba Fett before. I probably have my timeline completely wrong, but it has to do with the first experience anyone had of Boba Fett was between the two movies. If you sent away some proofs of purchase, you can get the Boba Fett action figure.
What?
Yeah, that's some knowledge that I'm dropping on you. And what is most memorable about that was everyone was expecting it, and it took much longer to arrive. And that was because they initially did a version where his jet backpack had a firing missile. And some poor kid died after his Battlestar Galactica missile shot in his eye, or he swallowed it and choked on it, and they said, "Oh, recall, we can't have this." And
this
they basically
why we can't have nice things.
Pretty much.
So it was that one kid,
you know,
shooting his eye out.
Mikey died of pop rocks, and some other kid swallowed a missile, and so because of that, you can when you go on eBay and you want to find the most expensive Star Wars action figure, it's these Boba Fett action figures that were the first release that didn't make it out, but they were manufactured. And there's like a J switch or something like that where you can sort of – these things cost thousands and thousands of dollars.
Well, it's no good to me dead.
Thank you for the quote, Cameron. On that note, we are going to break for a commercial. And when we come back, we are going to talk about holidays and Krampus and digital versus practical effects.
Hungry for a snack? How about the snack that eats like a meal? Soylent Green is the miracle food of high-energy plankton, gathered from the oceans of the world. Mm-mm, tasty. It's people-pleasing food.
Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow are also available. Due to the enormous popularity, Soylent Green is in short supply, so remember to Tuesday's Soylent Green Day.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Famous Monsters podcast. This is the first podcast out of the gate. I think we're having a little bit of fun, are we?
A little bit.
Maybe.
The alcohol's starting to kick in. So yes. Yeah, I'm having fun. All right.
So our apologies that if we were a little more stiff in the early onset of this podcast and we're a little looser now, it's because the alcohol is taking effect.
Oh, loosey goosey.
The Romulan brandy. Well, no, that's not true. We're drinking water, really. So anyway, it's the holiday season. And speaking of drinking, does anyone have big holiday plans? Are you guys going to break out your holiday ugly sweaters?
Oh, most definitely.
I have an ugly Christmas sweater party every year, and it gets a little wild.
I just wish that Famous Monsters had an ugly sweater, and if so, where could I get one?
What? We do!
That's a good question.
Oh, my gosh.
That's crazy.
Time for an incidental plug.
So cold.
If you guys head over to CaptainCo.com, we've got a whole magical line of ugly sweaters featuring Back to the Future, Krampus, all your favorite
the
holiday
Shock Monster.
Things. Shock Monster.
Which is our official mascot, if you didn't know.
Come in a couple different Christmas colors, so be sure to check those out.
That was kind of Rock Lobster reminiscent.
I was thinking that, too. Like, Shock Monster!
We should
make a song. I think we give the ugly sweater market a run for its money. Definitely.
Saint Nicholas is not coming this year. Instead, a much darker ancient spirit.
Those are hooves. Elk or goat?
What kind of goat walks on its hind legs?
His name is Krampus.
The real question here is, does anyone here know what a Krampus is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll Had be you heard truthful. Of Krampus before Originally, this movie? I didn't, and I think you guys are all lying.
No, we're hipsters.
Well, I can actually say I had heard of Krampus before the movie had came out, and that's only because of a little beautiful show called The Office.
Ah.
And the character on there named Dwight had used Krampus to pretty much scare everyone in the show. And that's where I first discovered it. And I thought it was a joke until this movie came out. And then I did some studying. And it's like, okay, this is as old as Santa Claus. It is no longer a joke. It is real. And I'm using it when I have kids. For sure. Krampus will be in our house.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So you're already pre-planning your holiday threat. So no elf on the shelf. You're just going to have the cloven footprints of Krampus right outside your
house.
Most
definitely.
I'm a little upset that this wasn't more... Widely known because I did a bunch of nannying a couple of years ago, and Elf on the Shelf does not work. But I feel like if I had known about Krampus, I could have struck fear into the hearts of many tiny children.
Get them to go to bed on time.
And they would have gone to bed.
I think just the threat of Santa Claus putting you on the naughty list is plenty. I guess these kids these days, they're too smart for their own good. Is that the case?
Yeah.
The belt. What about the belt? Does the belt work?
I can't. If
I wanted a Famous Monsters belt, where could I go to meet my child with? But I'll get this back on track. I remember first hearing about Krampus on an episode of The Venture Brothers, and remember I mentioned that earlier because I'm wearing the T-shirt. Well, they had an unreleased holiday Christmas special on one of their DVD box sets, and it was just this creature, Krampus, came and crashed the party. And would not stop trying to make love to Dr. Venture himself. So, like, the entire time you got Krampus in one of his forms. Because, you know, he's always depicted with usually the chain and the sack and all that stuff. So that was my first experience of it. And then I think Kevin Smith even mentioned it at one point on his podcast, Smodcast, about the legend of the Krampus. Because, you know, he gets high and then he talks about things he finds interesting. Right. So, like, I had already heard of him. And if anything, I was surprised that it took Hollywood so long to, like, bring this character to life.
Yeah,
it is a little... Shocking.
Well, I think Michael Dougherty kind of felt the same way, and he seems to be the go-to guy for holiday movies after Trick or Treat, and now he's cornering the market with Christmas. But he told me that basically what he used to do before everything could be shared on Facebook and Twitter and social media and everything in between, he used to send emails back and forth to his pals with the old vintage Krampus postcards just for laughs. And he decided one day, wait a minute, this would make actually a really good force to be reckoned with when it comes to a holiday creature, a holiday monster. And for those who don't exactly know what Krampus is and what Michael Dougherty's Krampus is, the writer-director talked to Famous Monsters. He talked to me, and he explained exactly what his Krampus is all about. Here's a little clip.
When did you first discover the Krampus folktale?
Were you younger or older? No, it was it wasn't that long ago. It was like the early 2000s. Because this is before social media, so it already sounds like ancient history. But before Facebook, you know, we would just forward jokes and emails to each other via mail. And the Krampus postcards were something that started to creep up just as the internet was coming into maturity. And I was always wanting to do a creepy Christmas film, but I couldn't quite find a mascot of the figurehead. When I was a kid, I would draw Santa Claus, C-L-A-W-S. but that always felt, you know, just a bit sort of amateurish and just not quite up to snuff. And then, again, through doing research about the true origins of Christmas, all roads sort of lead you to Krampus. Mm. You find out that at the center of all the original celebrations and myths, there was this horned, demonic figure who came before Santa Claus. So, again, you have something that is whose origins and myths have sort of been warped over the years, and Krampus was the original mascot of the holiday season.
So it was a malevolent mascot before there was a benevolent mascot, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah. But, I mean, what I find so interesting about him is that I actually don't view him as completely malevolent. He has that appearance, but if you really go and you look at all the old postcards, he's more of a mischief spirit than anything. He's always got a smile on his face. He's always having a good time. And I find that the postcard depictions of him, they have a really strong, wicked sense of humor. You know, he's not just some crazed maniac with an axe going around killing people. There's a sense of fun and purpose to the character, and that was really important for us to retain in the film.
I really have no knowledge of the character, and to me, it's very a frightening figure as opposed to mischievous. So, how do you sort of approach this character in the film in terms of, you know, what sort of personality emanates from this that you can tell me about?
Well, he's, you know, when I say he's mischievous, it doesn't mean that he's a knee slapper by any means. I just mean that there's a sort of method to Krampus's madness, in that he enjoys, I think, and savors the fear that he creates in his victims. And it's not, you know, it's like he could just kick down your door and grab you and haul everybody off to the underworld really easily, but he enjoys the cat and mouse nature of what he does, which is why he employs minions and helpers. That's something that is, from what I know, wholly unique to our depiction of the character, is that he doesn't work alone. So I think all in all, we have potentially 9 or 10 different monsters in this movie, in addition to Krampus.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because something that we thought was really fun, my co-writers and I, was sort of taking the Santa Claus myth and really turning on its head. And Santa doesn't work alone. You know, he's got elves and reindeer and magical toys and all those sort of sidekicks. And we just thought, well, it would be interesting if you really want to portray, you know, Krampus as the shadow of St. Nicholas, to give Krampus a similar sort of arsenal. And in our story, he definitely enjoys letting his minions have their fun and just sort of sitting back and watching the show at times before also, you know, intervening himself when necessary.
I would think also with Krampus, it looks like you're using lots of practical effects and puppets.
Yes.
And so on and so forth. And I commend you on doing that. And I thank you for doing that. But I would think also on the set there are lots of unforeseen technical snafus. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, I love practical effects. I grew up watching all the classic black and white movies. You know, I was a child of the 80s. But as a child of the 80s, you know, we had the benefit of watching a lot of catching up on all the decades beforehand via cable television. Because it was sort of like the early to mid-80s when cable was just getting started, so they were just raiding their vaults and dumping every old TV show and monster movie and sci-fi movie onto cable. So it was a really compressed education in the history of monster movies.
Sure.
And the thing I always loved most was the behind-the-scenes images of Boris Karloff being made up as Frankenstein, you know, or a peek behind a werewolf transformation in American Werewolf in London, and just admiring the art and the science of creating these creatures. And I think that was a really great education in how to do that. But then I was also keenly aware of how creature effects evolved in the 90s with Jurassic Park and Terminator and everything else.
Sure.
And you know, and listen, I think that we definitely have lost our way by focusing too much on digital at times, but digital can also be a huge and helpful tool. And so I really enjoy the hybrid approach where you get as much as you can in camera using puppets and animatronics and everything else, but the beauty is that you can now very easily and cheaply go in and use a computer to enhance those puppets with some digital trickery or remove rods, wires, or completely erase puppeteers from a shot if you want to. And so by doing that, there's that perfect middle ground of charm where it's clearly a puppet, but it's doing things that a puppet shouldn't be able to do. You know, and there's a texture that you don't get if you use a digital creature. And when you shoot practically, you're sort of forced to limit your angles, and you're forced to work with more shadow and atmosphere, which I think helps build the suspense. The problem with a lot of digital creatures or digital effects in horror films is that because you don't have the same limitations, you're more likely to go ahead and show your creature from head to toe in bright light in a shot. But if you do that, you completely take away its mystery and its power, and hence you take away its ability to conjure any real fear.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I love the old school approach, but, you know, we are a hybrid film, so we have Weta Workshop doing all of our physical puppets and creatures, and then Weta Digital is also doing a ton of visual effects, whether it's digital set extensions, like I mentioned before, removing rods and wires and puppeteers and things like that. But there are a couple characters in the film which are digital but were made to feel practical, and I don't want to give it away, but they're really a great surprise in the movie. But I kind of use digital to replace certain effects that I might normally do practically. So it's like using digital effects to replace matte paintings or atmospheric effects. So it's all about the tool and the desired effect and how to use it properly.
So one of the wonderful things that I admire about Michael Dougherty is that he loved the Amblin movies growing up, everything from Gremlins and Poltergeist to everything in between. And these were the pre-CGI days when CGI was in its infancy and you had practical effects.
Definitely the golden age for a lot of us of like watching films growing up.
you watch these movies now, and I don't feel like they feel dated at all, because I think CGI itself has gone so overboard. I'd rather, you know, I watch something like, say, Van Helsing, where I love the concept, I love the idea, and I hate to say it, because I want to support every idea like Van Helsing, but I threw up in my mouth a little bit with so much CGI. I just could not, I could not stomach it. It really turned me off. So Krampus, I'm very, very excited about, especially not knowing much about it. And I watched this trailer and I'm thinking to myself, this really looks fun. There's the right amount of humor and horror and definitely these practical hybrid effects that Michael Dougherty talks about.
Well, I was, you know, really excited to hear him talk about this specifically because in our last issue, we had talked with Guillermo del Toro about his use of practical effects in Crimson Peak. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating because I just originally thought all the ghosts were going to be CGI. And he talked about using practical effects and then melding that with the CGI to make these creatures really come to life. So it was cool to read, you know, Michael Dougherty wanted that for Krampus, that it would be a like a nice blending of the two to, you know, give a little extra to the practical effects and then at the same time make the CGI look a little more practical.
Yeah.
So very respectable.
Yeah. Ironically, I have to say that with that Crimson Peak, which I really enjoyed, really sumptuous, amazing production design, and the effects were fantastic. I was watching that knowing, well, I knew afterwards that the ghosts were real people in costumes and they had to enhance them with the CGI. Sadly, these days, if it looks amazing, my mind says, well, they must have CGI'd it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it can't be real.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my the tipping point has tipped way over now, and now I have to sort of bring my mindset back. I'm hoping watching Force Awakens that we won't think that everything is not happening in front of us.
I feel like he's going to – JJ has a good handle and mindset on keeping it to the old school ways, like as a big fan himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants to have that nice touch of realism where, like, this is a real creature in front of you, you know, and maybe the CGI would just be in the space stuff. Like, I highly doubt we're going to have hanging spaceships on strings.
Although, you know, that looks pretty good.
But that could be something,
yeah.
You know. But it's nice with directors like himself and, you know, and a guy working on Krampus, you know, doing things right by using real props, using real people in costumes, you know, or makeup.
It's tangible.
Know? And then, yeah, you know, because then for the actors, there's a sense of realism. Like, I don't have to pretend.
Right.
There's no green screening this.
Something to
you
react
know.
To.
I could really feel afraid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, David Koechner even, like, mentioned, like, when Weta, you know, they're the ones doing the effects and stuff like that. It's just like, yeah, you know you're in for a good movie because him just describing the teams of how many people, you know, for per beast, as it were, it's just like, it's going to be, I can't wait to see it because just the trailer alone, seeing the Krampus just for a split second on the rooftop, it looks like terrifying.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see that. Or just the hoofs, like walking. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes you think of aliens. Mm-hmm. You first see that as a kid, you know, knowing that there's a man in that suit. You know, it's just
well,
so
as a
creepy.
Kid, you don't know that there's a man in that suit. You're like, oh my God, it's real.
Just me. Just me.
Again, another spoiler. You're saying they weren't aliens. They were actual people in suits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm learning a lot on today's podcast. Well, in addition to talking to Michael Dougherty, we also talked to David Koechner, and he talks about his experience not only working on Krampus, but he also talks about his experience as a dad of five handling the holiday horror of reality. And it's kind of a fun little Q&A that you can check out in the new issue of Famous Monsters. That's on newsstands December 8th as we speak.
Yeah.
We're going to go to another word from our sponsor.
This holiday season, cozy up by the fireplace with a mug of hot chocolate with extra marshmallows and enjoy your ugly Famous Monsters Christmas sweater with a loved one. With the Famous Monsters holiday package, you'll receive an ugly Christmas sweater, two coasters, and a current issue of the magazine, all for $49.99. A deal so good, it makes St. Nicholas oh so jolly. Available only at CaptainCo.com. And while you're there, don't forget to order your shock box for the month of December. Every shock box is guaranteed an exclusive Famous Monsters t-shirt featuring an older magazine cover, a special comic from American Gothic Press, a priceless matted print, and oh so much more. A $70 value available to you for only $19.99. Be the coolest monster kid on your block and order yours today.
So that wraps up our first podcast, our first Famous Monsters podcast.
Hooray!
It's kind of fun. Well, we are very excited to be doing this, and we plan to do a lot more. And coming up on the next Famous Monsters podcast, we're going to keep on diving into the December issue, and that's got a lot going on. And so among the many things that are going on in the issue, we're going to be talking to Martin Landau. Space 1999 turns 40 this year. And I was very, very, very fortunate to be able to sit down with the Oscar winner.
Very good to see you.
Oh, my gosh. We sat down for hours. 4 hours, dang, to be exact. I kid you not. He kept me there because he just loved to talk. And I said, I will listen to you as long as you want to talk. He was the chatty. I was the Kathy. And we talked about Space 1999. We talked about Mission Impossible. We talked about Ed Wood. We talked about everything and anything, and he also said a couple things off the record, which will remain off the record.
Damn.
But if you guys pay me 5 cents, maybe I'll let you listen to the recording.
Take credit cards?
No. With all due respect to Martin Landau, those secrets remain secrets, and we had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time talking. So we're going to be playing a little bit of that interview with Space 1999's Martin Landau next time around. And Flash Gordon also turns 35. 35 years ago. He'll save some of us. That movie opened up 35 years ago in December, and that's one of our variant covers for Famous Monsters, a wonderful, wonderful art by Terry Wolfinger, artist. And so I talked to Sam J. Jones, and he gave me a real, real good perspective on...
I'm jealous of that.
Not only talking about Sam working on Flash Gordon, but he also talked about sort of his career resurgence, what he's been doing between now and the Ted movies. And there's even a movie about his life after Flash called Life After Flash. And so that's kind of a cool thing going on.
Now I'm going to have that song stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
So we appreciate you listening to the Famous Monsters podcast. We want you to go out and we want you to get the magazine or order it online. Where can you get them, Caroline?
Well, now that you asked. if you guys want to pre-order the magazine, it's available at CaptainCo.com. We have all three covers, our Flash cover, as well as our original trilogy and Force Awakens cover.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have all of our cool holiday merchandise as well, including ugly sweaters. Our super special Krampus sweater will be available.
Back to the Future, Shock Monster, a bunch of choices.
All the best, you know. And be sure to head over to FamousMonsters.com for more toy reviews, video reviews, movie stuff, all the best stuff. And AmericanGothicPress.com for our comic books.
Did you know that we've got comic books? We have comic books?
We have comic books? What?
Oh, my gosh.
With pictures
we have
and stuff?
A lot of amazing comic books. We should have a podcast about that.
Yeah, we should. We should to talk about them. If only we could find somebody who works for the company.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll keep searching. Twitter handles and all the social media. You know, it's very, very important to talk about Famous Monsters if you like Famous Monsters and to share your enthusiasm. Where can you go, Caroline?
Our Twitter handle is at FMOF, and you can also search hashtag FM and me for Monster Kid goodness.
And so you could also go to at AGP Monsters for the comic book stuff. My personal Twitter as executive editor of Famous Monsters is at Tiki Ambassador. One day, maybe I'll explain that. And
mysterious.
Cameron, you got something?
You can follow me on Twitter at Cam Comic Corner, and I'm also in charge of the AGP Monsters Twitter account. So if you say you suck, I will see that. So thank you.
I'm tweeting at you right now.
Of course, so basically look for us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Pinterest, on Tumblr, on YouTube, standing on the street corner, handing out flyers because we're enthusiastic. Yes, we will try and limit the stalking to occasional appearances. And overall, if you enjoyed this podcast and you like Famous Monsters Magazine and our comics, please spread the word. You know, let us know what you think of it, and tell your friends what you think of it. Make sure to incorporate horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and genre pop culture into your conversations so we can ensure generations of monster kids to come. Not like this stuff is going away, but it's very important to tie it into Forrest Ackerman and Famous Monsters, who he kind of started it all. And it's not an exaggeration when you say that.
Granddaddy nerd. Fandom.
Thanks, Uncle Forry.
So until next time, and we're going to come up with maybe a better tagline. Stay scary.
The Famous Monsters Podcast is copyright Famous Monsters and Movieland Classics, LLC. All rights reserved.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.